What are your visions of yourself? You see, all of this business about if you get tired, how many of you get tired? You don't have to get tired. I don't get tired when it's time to go to sleep. There's no insomnia in my life, and there doesn't have to. Insomnia is one more of those things where you start telling yourself, I'm not going to be able to sleep. Look, you've been out, you're partying, you're at a convention, you're in New Orleans. Get into bed, let's say, and it's 2 o'clock, and you know you got to get up at 6. You look at your watch. All right, it's 2 o'clock. 3 o'clock. 4 o'clock. 5 o'clock. 6. 1, 2, 3. If I were to fall asleep right this second... And I'm not even close, all right? I'd only get 4 hours of sleep. Here it comes, ready? Great imagery now. Boy, am I going to be tired tomorrow. Whew! Oh, I'm going to be tired. That'll keep you awake for at least an hour, all right? Your body just kind of goes, oh, my God, and you start interfering with it. Your mind starts programming you, all right? Now, an hour later, you look at your watch and say, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock. 3 hours. Now you upgrade your neurotic expectations for yourself. I'm going to be a zombie tomorrow. And then when you get out of bed and the alarm goes off, if you sleep, what do? You start counting backwards now. 5 o'clock, 4 o'clock. You put your body instantly on droop. Kind of put your eyes sort of on bag. Don't expect anything out of me today. I didn't get any sleep last night or whatever. Until someone comes along halfway through the day and says, you know, we got a game tonight and we're going to go out and have a few drinks and we're going to... Hey, that's great. Yeah, I think I'd like to do that. It's a choice. You ever notice how tired you get when you got something unpleasant to do? You know, you look at the lawn equipment and look at the roller and the edger. I'm going to lie down for 3 or 4 months. I'm really tired. It's a choice. If you just tell yourself, I don't need to think tired thoughts. When I tell you that the kind of visualization I'm talking about can end asthma, asthma is an easy one. Anybody who's suffered with asthma, and I've had a stepson who's had it, and he holds on to it, and he believes it, and he wants to hang on to it, and that's it. He's going to have asthma until he doesn't want it anymore. And I tell him that, and he just gets mad because he wants to hold on to his asthma. And he gets a lot of attention for it, and he gets a lot of people to remind him that he's sickly and that he can't do this and do that. And so he gets a lot of positive sort of affirmation for his negative reaction. I have seen people eliminate a lot more than asthma. When people ask me, what kind of a therapist are you? Where do you fit in? You know, are you a behaviorist? Are you a rational emotive therapist? Are you Freudian psychoanalyst? I call myself a doo-doo therapist. And I really mean that. A doo-doo therapist is someone who believes in the great secrets of the universe. One of the great secrets that you'll read in ICUS is that I hear and I forget. I see and I remember. I do and I understand. And not one moment before. I mean, not one of you who knows how to swim by watching somebody else do it or listening to somebody else give you instruction. You know how to swim because you got in the water and you flop around and you fill your mouth up a few times and then eventually you do. And you know something? What do you think is the difference in your physical skills between the moment before when you couldn't swim and the moment afterwards when you did let go and could swim for the first time? You think your physical skills are any different? They're exactly the same. We all know how to swim. Now you believe you can. And when you believe you can, you just do it. You just do it. And if you can't ride a bicycle, as a woman who came to me and said, I can't ride a bicycle. My parents wouldn't let me. My mother would never let me get on a bicycle when I was a little kid. And I had these big white teeth and she was afraid I would break them. And I said, okay, that's great. Let's go. She said, go, where are we going? She wanted to sit in the office. I said, I've got a bicycle downstairs in the garage, and we'll go on, and I'm going to teach you how to ride a bike. You think I'm paying these kind of prices to come here and have you teach me how to ride a bicycle? I want to know why I can't. I said, oh, well, you didn't say that. That'll take another 30 seconds. You can't because you never got on one. And as soon as you do, and are willing to fail and fall down a few times, then you'll know how to ride it. And until that, you can blame mama forever. But it isn't going to change a thing. If you want to change something in your life, if you want to quit smoking, you don't need to go to the shit clinic. You don't need to go and poke holes in your cigarettes. You know, so you get a hernia, you know, trying to get that nicotine down into your lungs and a little bit less each time. And they have now a thing out called poo-poo spray. I don't know if you've seen this, but it smells like poo-poo, all right? And you spray it on your fingers so that every time you go, oh, I don't want...
No, I won't be having any of those today, no.
Now, you don't have to do that. What you do is, the first thing you do is you see yourself as an ex-smoker. You just see that. You visualize yourself there, and you take credit for having such a wonderful picture of yourself. You do that first. And then the second thing you do is you tell yourself how easy this is going to be. This isn't hard. There's nothing difficult about quitting smoking. You just do it. You just don't put cigarettes in your mouth one day at a time. That's what you do. And you don't tell yourself, I'm going to want them, I'm going to get fat, and all of these kind of... You don't do that. You stop the blame, and you do it. You want to lose weight. You see yourself looking the way you want to look instead of going on a diet. Everybody I know on a diet is fat. And if you change the way you see yourself, then when you've eaten enough, you stop. You just see yourself in a different way. You stop that. No, I don't want any more. You say, I think I'll exercise a little more. I'm going to go out, and I'm going to do some kind of exercise. I'm going to walk. I'm going to get myself on an exercise bike. I'm going to go to a dance class. I see myself this way. Now I'm just going to act out on that instead of saying, oh, it's so hard to quit. It's so hard to lose weight. I'm so depressed. I think I'll have some candy as soon as I get over that, you know. And I had a person come up to me after a talk one time and said, Dr. Dyer, you mean to tell me you never get depressed, ever? I said, of course not. She says, oh, that's depressing. Oh, that depresses me even more. You see, it depends on how you see yourself.
See, everything that's happening to you, including getting older, is a choice. You don't have to think old. Most people who get older think old. I run with a guy who's in his 90s. 90s. That's true. I'm not kidding either. His name is Ernie. He's been three times. He's 92. He's outlived all of his wives. He's gone with a woman now who's 51 years younger than he is. 51 years younger. She doesn't know how old he is. He looks about 62, 63 years old. He runs 6 miles every day. He's very active. He got mad when they turned him down for a mortgage application at 92. He says, what the hell's the problem here? I'll pay it back. I've always paid my bills before. I said, Ernie, you're 92 years old. They don't want to invest money in people 92. He said, what the hell's the problem? I don't understand that. I said, Ernie, look, and I've told him this. I said, some people are positive, and you know I am. I wrote the books on it, all right? I said, you know, some things can be fatal, and watch out for it. He said, what? I said, sex, for example. He said, oh, to me, if she dies, she dies. I said, that's her problem. So that's happened before. He said, I asked her about sex. He said, I checked that out first thing. And she said to me infrequently, he said, right away I asked her, is that one word or two? infrequently, you say, never mind, it's too late. He talked to me about his oldest boy, and it's true. He's talking to me. We're on the beach one day. We're walking. We did a 6 mile walk in the morning, and then we were going to jog in the evening. And he's talking about his oldest son. He said, my oldest boy's getting ready to die. I said, what the hell are you talking about? Yeah, just like his mother. She said, she's going to die. She died at this age. I said, well, how old is he? 73. He says, oldest boy is 73. I said, well, you got a picture of him? He said, sure. His son looks like Socrates. I mean, he had this long white beard. He was this old-looking man. This was his son. It looked like he could have been his grandfather. See, if you're going to have the visualizations I've been talking about today, and you must change those pictures, and I mentioned earlier I want to show you how to do it, you have to send away all blame for everything in your life. All right? All blame must go. You can't be blaming anything that's going on in your life on anyone except yourself. Your birth order, it doesn't matter whether you're the youngest, the oldest, the middle child. It's like wherever you are is where you are supposed to be. And if your parents did anything, you remind yourself that they did what they knew how to do. You can't ask any more of anyone. And forgive them. Whatever it is, whoever in your life is causing any dissonance, any anguish, any pain, whoever they are, any grudges that you've had, any anger that you're holding on to, anything that's lasted a long time, forgive. Love is forgiving, and it is forgiving. It is both, and it's the same word. You must give, and you must forgive along with it. And if you keep that in mind and take all the blame out and say, I created who I am. My personality is who I chose. If I have been shy, I didn't inherit shy genes. I have been making shy choices.
I am not a nervous person. I have been making nervous choices. I am not a person who's not good at selling. I have been making non-selling choices. I have been thinking like a duck instead of like an eagle. Just for a moment, just take a minute and just kind of calm yourself down and try this with me. Just try it. Hold your hand out if you want to. I mean, however you want to do it. And a picture in your hand, a lemon. Kind of close your eyes if you want to and listen to my instructions. And take the lemon and feel the texture of the lemon. And open your eyes and look at it. See if you can see a lemon there. See if you can see the little bumps that are on a lemon. See if you can see the little green nub on one end and how it comes to sort of a little point at the other end. And feel it. And feel a little bit of the moisture almost that's on the skin. Just practice for a second. Just take a knife, a paring knife, your favorite knife, and just cut it right down there, right in half. Right? Just kind of slice it in your hand. And then take the pointy end aside and put it away. And then take the other half of the lemon and look at it. And run your finger along the top of it and feel the moisture. Can you feel that? Now take the lemon, and as you hold it and see that lemon, just move it up close to your nose so that you can smell it. Just bring it right up and smell the fragrance of it. See if you can actually smell the citric acid. Now hold it close to your nose. Now take it back down. Now open up your mouth and take the lemon and move it up close to your mouth, as close as you can get it, and take a bite right out of it. Go ahead, just take a bite out of it. Now what's happening in your mouth right now? Okay. Do you have saliva in your mouth? Most of you have. You're going to get a little more in about another 5 seconds. You feel the saliva coming into your mouth? Why is saliva coming into your mouth? Because citric acid is attacking your mouth right now. And the only defense you have against citric acid in the billions of years of evolution that have produced you is saliva. Saliva goes into your mouth to fight it. It's still there, isn't it? Mouth kind of dry. You feel it? That's visualization. It's nothing difficult. There's nothing complex about it. That's what hypnotism is. Well, next time you go to a dentist, you close your eyes when he's about to drill, say, no Novocaine today. I'm going to have an orgasm instead. Haven't had one for a while. You get this one now, you're going to be real and real good. All right, I need some volunteers now. What you do is you think, as the drill goes on, every time the drill goes on, you think of the most positive, beautiful, exquisite, loving experience you've ever had in your life. When the drill goes off, you shut it out. When the drill goes on, many times in the dentist, I say, look, will you turn the drill on another minute or so? Just about ready. You turn that drill off.
The importance of visualization for me and imagery related to almost every single thing that you do in life. If you're a salesperson and you visualize a sale not working out, or even if you have that thought that that person probably won't want to buy this thing from me, or they won't want to close on this deal that we have agreed to, if you think that way and visualize it that way, you're creating the opportunity for you to have exactly that happen to you. It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you see it in your mind as working out, closing the deal, getting someone to buy the product, whatever it is. And if you're selling brake linings to a hardware store, and you can see the brake linings on their shelf, and you can see the receipt, and you can practice that image and see it, and then operate on that image. If it doesn't work out, let's start from that premise, which I don't even let in, because I know it will. And when you know it will, it will. But if it doesn't, you say, all right, instead of, see, this guy's wrong, I knew that this karma stuff, and I don't want to hear any more of this stuff. You don't do that. You say, there's something in this for me. It's not supposed to be working out right now. I wonder what I can do to learn from that. Let me re-examine it. Let me look at it. You don't blame anybody else, all right? Blame must go. If you are going into a tax audit and you believe that it's not going to work out, you are going to act out on that auditing image that you have in your mind. And you will not prepare yourself in the same way as if you believe that you're not going to have to pay more taxes and that you've been an honest taxpayer and that you filled out your forms properly and that you are entitled to not have to pay additional taxes. And that's how you're going to operate. And you get an accountant who believes that as well. And you go in from that premise, you'll find yourself having much, much less difficulty than if you go in saying, oh, they're going to look through my records. It's going to take 2 days. They have no right to go through all of these things. I hate it when they do this. And you go through this whole process. You are creating what it is that you don't want for yourself, because you're going to operate and behave on the basis of whatever image you have. If you believe it's going to be nasty, you're going to be behaving in ways to have that outcome come about. If you want to get a parking place, you can image yourself seeing one. Instead of looking for no place to park, you begin to see yourself as having one. If you want to have health, you begin to see yourself looking and feeling and acting the way you want to, and never detracting from that picture, and you can make that happen for yourself in your life. If you don't want negative things to go on in your life, then practice visualizing and having positive affirmations toward the things that you previously thought negatively about. I like the example of calling the phone company and asking them if they can come out and fix your phone. And if they say to you, well, we'll be there by noon because we can't give you an exact time, you will find that if you put the phone down and say, they're not going to come, I know they're not, they never have before, and they always abuse us, and how dare they say that, and you start waiting for them not to come, by 11 o'clock when they haven't arrived yet, all you're doing is getting yourself more and more upset and helping them not to come. Not in the sense of that if you visualize it, that's going to get the truck there. I'm not saying that, although I'm not discounting that either. What I'm saying is that if you image them coming and they're not there yet, what you will do is start acting on the image of them being there, and you'll pick up the phone at 11 o'clock and you'll say, I'd like to see if your image is consistent with mine, and can you tell me what time that truck will be there? You start acting in ways to bring about what you want, rather than waiting till 12 o'clock, walking out, storming mad, and never having done anything to correct it. Your thought processes create the images that you have. Those images create the behavior. And you can't back one up from the other unless you're willing to think that it's going to work out, and that's the premise you're operating from. That's a very important point for people if they want to be enlightened. If you believe that it's going to work out, then you'll start to see opportunities. If you don't, then you'll see obstacles.